And now turn to Job chapter 3, please. Job chapter 3. Job chapter 3. So he's gone through all the trials and the attacks of Satan. And as I believe I mentioned last week, I don't see Satan anywhere else in the book of Job after this point, at least personally involved. There's some things later on mentioned about him, but that's just descriptions of him and so forth. But as far as his attacking Job, he seems to be out of the picture at this point. That doesn't mean the attack ends. Verse 3, or chapter 1, 3 and verse 1. After this, Job opened his mouth and cursed his day. Twice it said before this, in all this, Job sinned not with his tongue. That's about to end. Isn't that our problem? As long as we keep our mouth closed, right, Cindy? Everything's good. But then we open our mouths. And that was Job's problem. But it says, he cursed his day. He still never cursed God. Never charged God foolishly in anything that he said. He just begins by cursing his day. Verse 2. And Job spake and said, let the day perish wherein I was born, and the night in which it was said there was a man-child conceived. Let that day be darkness. Let not God regard it from above, neither let the light shine upon it. Let not darkness and the shadow of death stain it. Let a cloud dwell upon it. Let the darkness of the day terrify it. As for that night, let darkness seize upon it. Let it not be joined unto the days of the year. Let it not come into the number of the months. Lo, let not that night be solitary. Let no joyful voice come therein. This is him cursing the day he was born. Let them curse it that curse the day who are ready to raise up their mourning. Let the stars of the twilight thereof be dark. Let it look for light, but have none. Neither let it see the dawning of the day, because it shut not up the doors of my mother's womb, nor hid sorrow from mine eyes. Man, he doesn't only curse it. He banned it, he blasted it, he vexed it, he hexed it. Anything you can imagine, the day that he was born. He said, if it could just be removed and not even counted in God's calendar, just take that day away. You see, Job served the right master, and he served him the right way, but he was rewarded as if he had been serving the other master. And that's how he's looking at this thing. And that's how his friends look at it too. And that's how we would too if we were in the same situation. Again, I guess the older I get, the less harsh I am on Job, seeing what he went through. And that doesn't justify him in any way. But, man, he suffered. Everything is gone. His children, all of his substance, thousands of head of livestock, everything's gone. His servants and even his wife turned against him. And now his health is gone. And in Job's mind, I can't help but think that he expects death is soon going to come. It's done. And all the faithfulness, all the years that he had served God, all the things that he had done for God, in his mind, at this point, seemed to have counted for naught. Because God has just backed off. And God did back off to allow Satan to come in and get him and do this to him. And Job just think, man, I've served you for nothing, God. Because you've let me go. And so he's cursing this thing. And while he's cursing, I can imagine the stenographer in heaven writing it all down. In fact, later on he says something to that effect. Oh, that were a book written. There was. Recording everything that Job said. It's all written down. And I think in Matthew chapter 12 and verse 36, we'll be judged for every idle word. It's all going to be brought back. Look at Jude verse 15. Jude in verse 15. I'm sorry, verse 14. And Enoch also, the seventh from Adam, prophesied of these things, saying, Behold, the Lord cometh with 10,000s of his saints to execute judgment upon all, to convince all that were ungodly among them of all their ungodly deeds which they have ungodly committed, and of all their hard speeches which ungodly sinners have spoken against him. Now again, Job's not speaking against God, but these things, he says, this was the preaching of Enoch before he was translated, that he should not see death. Here's another example. Go to Jeremiah chapter 20. Jeremiah chapter 20. Jeremiah was called the weeping prophet. And I don't know that he suffered to the extent that Job did, but he definitely suffered. And suffered severely. And for a prolonged period, probably for longer than Job suffered. Maybe not to the degree, but he suffered over a longer period of time. And he says this, beginning verse 14 of Jeremiah chapter 20. Cursed be the day wherein I was born. Let not the day wherein my mother bare me be blessed. Cursed be the man who brought tidings to my father, saying, A man-child is born unto thee, making me him very glad. And let that man be as the cities which the Lord overthrew, and repented not, and let them hear the cry in the morning, and the shouting at noontide, because he slew me not from the womb, or that my mother might have been my grave, and her womb to be always great with me. Wherefore came I forth out of the womb to see labor and sorrow, and my days should be consumed with shame. That the day that I was born be erased. He cursed that day. Questions or comments thus far? Dan. Don't know. If there's something there, I missed it. But I don't see anything that indicates how long. Now, we do know that his friends sat before him 7 days. And now he opens his mouth and begins to speak. After they just sat there staring at him for 7 days. So he's at least endured it 7 days. But how long between Satan beginning till he begins speaking here, other than 7 days, I don't know. Anyone else? Verse 11. Why died I not from the womb? So up through verse 10, he's saying, why'd I have to be born? Why couldn't that thing just be erased? Why couldn't it be forgotten? Now he's saying, after I was born, why couldn't I have died? Why died I not from the womb? Why did I not give up the ghost when I came out of the belly? Why did the knees prevent me, or why the breast that I should suck? For now should I have lain still and been quiet. I should have slept. Then I had been at rest. With the kings and counselors of the earth, which built desolate places for themselves, or with princes that had gold who filled their houses with silver, or as an hidden, untimely birth had not been, as infants which never saw light. So why couldn't he have died? But this last verse, I noticed something here that I'd never seen before. Look at that again, verse 16. Or as an hidden, untimely birth miscarriage maybe, or a premature baby anyway. But notice, here's the thing, birth I had not been, as infants which never saw light. You know what that is? That's a child in the womb. Life in the womb before birth. So another verse to support that, that life begins in the womb, not at birth. Questions or comments on any of that? And some of this, you know, I don't know a whole lot to expound on. I think it's pretty well self-explanatory. Verse 17, there the wicked cease from troubling. And there the weary be at rest. There the prisoners rest together. They hear not the voice of the oppressor. The small and great are there, and the servant is free from his master. This is in death, where they're released from all these things. Verse 20. Wherefore is light given to him that is in misery, and life unto the bitter in soul, which longeth for death, but it cometh not. That's Job. Why couldn't I just die? But what did he not do? Kill himself. He didn't commit suicide, and there was no assisted suicide. I mean, if ever there was a case for it, you think this could be it, of what this guy's been through. He says, which verse 21, which long for death, but it cometh not, and digged for it more than for hid treasures. Digging for it more than for hid treasures. Which rejoice exceedingly and are glad when they can find their grave. Death is a release. Would be a release to him. But he still doesn't take it in his own hands. Because he still fears God. In all of this, he continues to fear God. Why is light given to him whose way is hid and whom God hath hedged in? For my sighing cometh before I eat, and my roarings are poured out like the waters. He wants to die. He's ready to die. He's given up. But of course we know the end of the story too. And how foolish it would have been for him to give up now and miss what God was going to do in the end of this thing. Verse 25, for the thing which I greatly feared is come upon me. I should have known this was too good to be true. His wealth, his prosperity, all the blessings that he'd enjoyed, the acclaim of his friends and his neighbors and his countrymen and all those things, but it's gone. And all he's got left is these three clowns sitting in front of him. The thing that I greatly feared has come upon me. And that which I was afraid of is come unto me. I was not in safety. Neither had I rest. Neither was I quiet. Yet trouble came. Seems to have kind of a fatalistic view of life, doesn't they? Look back at verse 5 of chapter 1. And it was so, when the days of their feasting were gone about, this is talking about his children, in verse 4, they're gathered together in the house to celebrate their birthdays, it appears. When the days of their feasting were gone about, that Job sent and sanctified them, and rose up early in the morning and offered burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, it may be. There's nothing to indicate that they had. He just says, I know my kids. And more than likely, somebody's done something. It may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts. Thus did Job continually. It's kind of a negative or a fatalistic view of life that Job seems to have. And so this begins his words, which as he opened his mouth to his friends, and now we're about to see the first friend begin to speak. Questions or comments on any of that, chapter 3? Verse 4 says, and his sons went and feasted in their houses, everyone his day. That's about it. You know, I don't know what else their day would be other than a birthday. Oh. I don't think that's going to help you.
That's why I asked.
I kind of put this that each of the sons had a set day that he had the family together. Not for celebration, just to have the family together. And they rotated between their homes.
Could be. I mean, that's what I always heard it described as to his birthdays, but it's, you know, I'm not going to argue with you about that. Anyone else? Dean? I mean, yes, but there's just understanding human nature, too, and just kind of, you know. I don't think these kids were doing anything wrong. I don't think they were getting, you know, it's not like a drunken party. I don't think some people read that into that. I don't think that's the case. Job is just taking a precaution. Mm-hmm. But what we know now about man's nature, he's right. Jeremiah 17:9. I can't think of it. There, thank you. And desperately wicked, who can know it? I mean, that's, you know, I believe in the depravity of man. I think Job did too. I think that was the motivation there. Not that, you know, I gave that impression the way I said that. I was more joking, but I know my kids, you know. But he wants to make sure that those kids are right with God, and that was he was doing the duty of a good father. And I didn't mean to disparage the kids by saying that, but I know realize that that's what I did, and maybe gave the wrong impression there. But, yeah. Mm-hmm. In the nature of me. Danny? I'm going to say yes. As the offerings of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and all the others during this period of time. You know, there was no tabernacle yet. There's no Levitical priesthood yet. So this is still under the age of conscience, looking at it dispensationally. And remember, under the age of conscience, there's no clear, the law hasn't been given, so there's no clear definition of what God expects. He's shown that he accepts sacrifice by accepting Abel's, blood sacrifice, by accepting Abel's and rejecting Cain's, and also by the sacrifice that he's made in the Garden of Eden for Adam and Eve, with the animal skin and so forth. So they live by what they understand to be God's expectation. And certainly there's, you know, as we've talked about already, there is some knowledge that is communicated that's even, some people today even struggle understanding. So I believe, yes, God accepted those sacrifices. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hadn't thought about that, yeah. I'll throw this out now, but in the end, he ends up with 14 kids. He had 7 that got killed. God doubles what he had. The question is, did God give him 14 more kids? Did God resurrect these and give him 7 others? I'm not sure I can give an answer to that, but that's a possibility. We know he ended up with 14. How those 14 are comprised, we don't know. But just a thought. We'll touch that when we get to chapter 42, if we ever get there, if the Lord tarries. Any other questions or comments? Chapter 4. Now we have Eliphaz the Temanite begins to speak. Then Eliphaz the Temanite answered and said, and remember, as we talked about this, that when you look at where these three guys that talk are from, it indicates that Job lived somewhere east of Canaan. Teman is a city in the land of Edom. Indicates that he is from that area. And all the others seem to come from somewhere east of the Dead Sea, not from the land of Canaan. I don't think Job was related to Abraham. Of course, Abraham, the Jewish nation, the nation of Israel, began with Abraham, but not with him, but till after him. You understand what I'm saying? So, I guess Job could be related to Abraham. But where was Abraham from? East of Edom. Ur of the Chaldees. Okay. So, he's not from the land of Canaan, and I don't think we know he's not a Jew, because he lived at the time, or shortly after Abraham's time. And this individual here begins to speak. And as we read from here up and through, I think it's chapter 36, where these guys are going back and forth with Job, I think each of them speaks at least twice, if not 3 times. Some of them even speak more than that before Job responds to them. Yeah. Ur of the Chaldees. Yeah. But as these guys are speaking, a lot of what they say is biblically true. Okay? The problem is their application. So I'll kind of try to step away from their using this to beat Job down at times, and just to show the truth of what they're saying, just that applying it to Job is wrong. Okay, so keep that in mind as we go through this thing. Verse 2. If we essay to commune with thee, wilt thou be grieved? But who can withhold himself from speaking? Would it bother you if I said something, Job? But man, I just can't shut up. I got to say something. That's what's going on here. And Proverbs 27:6. I should look that up. Right? Proverbs 27:6. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. And these guys really change from the role of a friend to becoming his enemy through this thing. Verse 3. Behold, thou hast instructed many, and thou hast strengthened the weak hands. Thy words have upholden him that was falling, and thou hast strengthened the feeble knees. Job was a friend to a lot of people. Job administered to a lot of people. Look at chapter 16. Job 16. Verse 1. Then Job answered and said, I have heard many such things, miserable counselors are ye all. Shall vain words have an end, or what emboldeth thee that thou answerest? I also could speak as ye do, if your soul were in my soul's stead. I could heap up words against you and shake mine head at you, but I would strengthen you with my mouth, and with the moving of my lips would I assuage your grief. Because that's what he had done. Look at chapter 31, Job 31, verse 16. If I have withheld the poor from their desire, or have caused the eyes of the widow to fail, or have eaten my morsel myself alone, and the fatherless hath not eaten thereof. So he's saying, this is not what I did. I did the exact opposite. I took care of the poor. I fed them before myself. Verse 18, for from my youth he was brought up with me as with a father, and I have guided her from my mother's womb. If I have seen any perish for want of clothing, or any poor without covering, if his loins have not blessed me, and if he were not warmed with the fleece of my sheep, if I have lifted up my hand against the fatherless when I saw my help in the gate, then let mine arm fall from my shoulder blade and mine arm be broken from the bone. If I've done these injustices to people who are in need, then let me be cursed like this. For destruction from God is a terror to me, and by reason of His highness I could not endure. If I have made gold my hope, or have said to the fine gold, thou art my confidence, if I rejoice because my wealth was great, and because mine hand had gotten much, if I beheld the sun when it shined, or the moon walking in brightness, and my heart hath been secretly enticed, or my mouth hath kissed my hand, this also were iniquity to be punished by the judge. For I should have denied the God that is above. If I rejoiced at the destruction of him that hated me, or lifted up myself when evil found him, neither have I suffered my mouth to sin by wishing a curse to his soul. If the men of my tabernacle said not, oh, that we had of his flesh, we cannot be satisfied. The stranger did not lodge in the street, but I opened my doors to the traveler. Job was a friend to the fatherless. Anybody in need. And Eliphaz recognizes that. This is what you've done. And he says, you know, these are the things that you need here. But so he begins with this praise of Job. But then comes the backhand, verse 5. But now it has come upon thee, and thou faintest. Well, yeah. And you would too. It toucheth thee, and thou art troubled. Is not this thy fear, thy confidence, thy hope, and the righteousness of thy ways? This is what you're afraid of, wasn't it, Job? Well, that's what he just said. And as that other passage said, a miserable comforter is what this guy is. Questions or comments? Verse 7. Remember, I pray thee, whoever perished being innocent? Or where are the righteous? Where were the righteous cut off? Even as I have seen they that plow iniquity and sow wickedness reap the same. By the blast of God they perish, and by the breath of his nostrils are they consumed. Now you go through Psalms and you see that same thing. It's truth. It just doesn't apply to Job, which is what this guy's doing. This is what you deserve, Job. Job longed to reap what he had sown. And he's not. As I said before, he's reaping as though he had sown to the wrong master. He's suffering severely for it. He feared God. He feared the ways of sin, as we saw there in chapter 1 again, what he did for his children. And his hope and his confidence was in reaping what he had sown. and he's not. But this guy's misreading the whole thing. To Eliphaz, it seems obvious that this has happened because of some heinous secret sin or sins that Job has committed. And Christians, be careful. Because too often times we're just like Job's friends. Somebody goes through some trials and so forth, and we're quick to condemn them. Maybe a little bit slow to be there to comfort and encourage and help them. Be careful what you say to someone who's in trouble. Maybe they are in trouble because of sin, but just be careful. Because you know what? You might be wrong, like these guys were. Questions or comments? Funny. look at verse 11 of chapter 2. Now when Job's three friends heard of all this evil that was come upon him, they came everyone from his own place, Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, Zophar the Naamathite, for they had made an appointment together to come to mourn with him and to comfort him. So it appears that at least initially their motives were right. But somehow through the course of the 7 days of, verse 12. And when they lifted up their eyes afar off, they knew him not. They lifted up their voice and wept. And they rent every man his mantle and sprinkled dust upon their heads toward heaven. I'm not sure they were prepared for what they saw when they got there. So I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, and it appears that they came with the right motive. For the right reasons. But when they saw him, it was just, they couldn't believe the mess that they saw of this man who had been such a pillar in the community and one that was obviously looked up to and had benefited greatly by his wealth. He seems to have shared it. You know, we read in some of those passages there, the things that he'd done for everybody. And then it's just like, this just doesn't happen. And in fact, if we get there, there's a verse that kind of says to that effect. You know, this just doesn't come out of the dust. You know, it doesn't come out of the ground. There's a reason why this happened to you, Job. And that's correct. There was a reason. It's just not the reason they thought. It was because God saw Job, a man who was upright and feared him and eschewed evil, and I think there's one other description there. And God says, I can let Satan go on him, and he'll weather the storm, and he'll defeat Satan in the process. And these guys didn't know that. And Job didn't know that. That thought right there just strikes me over and over again. Job had no idea. I mean, if you're going through something and you know, okay, this is why this happened. And I can get through it because of this. But he got blindsided. Never expecting this, in fact, expecting the exact opposite. And all this has come upon him. It's like, God, where did you go? What did I do? And they see this. And then it goes south from there. That's at least my opinion on the thing, and that's why I base that opinion. Any other questions or comments? Jennifer. But there again shows that nature of man to automatically blame the sufferer for their suffering. When you better be careful, because does God punish us for sin or discipline us for sin? Absolutely. But we don't always know what's going on. Job did not know what was going on. He himself didn't know. Now, when I suffer, I can usually figure it out. Yep, I messed up, Lord. I know what I did. And in fact, I think God is obligated to make it clear to us when it's be a chastening for sin in our lives. So when if you prayed about that thing and God does not reveal anything, then stop blaming yourself for some sin. God is obligated to make it clear when you seek Him about that if your suffering is because of sin. And if it's not, then okay, God. Like Paul said, you know, the messenger of Satan to buffet me. I glory in my infirmities that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Because when I'm weak, then am I strong. And that's the way we need to approach that thing personally when some trial or suffering comes our way. First, yeah, God, did I mess up? Help me to see where that is. And then take care of it. If He shows you something, and if He doesn't, then you take that off the table. Say, okay, God, now what do I need to learn? And where's the grace that's going to help me through this? Either to live with it or to be freed from it. And God, whatever you want. If it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. Any other questions or comments? Chad? I think so, yes. Yeah. Because he said something about the fact that, you know, I've sat here long enough. I've listened to enough of this. So, yeah. Anyone else? Let's see, where did I leave off? Verse 10. Chapter 4, verse 10. The roaring of the lion, the voice of the fierce lion. The teeth of the young lions are broken. Even the strongest of beasts, the king of the jungle, suffers. Gets old, gets weak, perishes. Job was a lion. And he's assuming, yep, here we go. Verse 11, the old lion perishes for lack of prey. The stout lion's whelps are scattered abroad. There's a couple of things here that just seem to be particular shots against Job. What happened to his whelps? They're gone. Verse 12, now a thing was secretly brought to me, and my ear received a little thereof. Oh, God told me. He's claiming revelation from God. This secret thing that he heard. And thoughts from the visions of the night, when deep sleep falleth on men, fear came upon me, and trembling, which made all my bones to shake. And spirit passed before my face. The hair of my flesh stood up. It stood still, but I could not discern the form thereof. An image was before mine eyes. There was silence. And I heard a voice saying, shall mortal man be more just than God? Shall a man be more pure than his Maker? See, Job, you thought you were better than God. Holier than thou. You know, there's a lot of idioms that we have that come straight out of the Scriptures. That's that thought there. And that's what he's accusing him of. And this was that secret. God told me, and I'm revealing it to you now. Verse 18, behold, he put no trust in his servants, and his angels be charged with folly. What do you think in the plans, in the workings of God, in the time frame that I put this, is going to be foremost in the minds of these people? Exactly. I meant to look it up. They're probably, let's see, was a flood, I think 1,000 years before Abraham, something like that. It's not that far away. But that's probably the most significant event in God's calendar to this point in their lives. The Exodus hasn't happened yet. That lived in the minds, the Exodus and the Passover, lived in the minds of those people for centuries. For millennia, this thing. And he says his angels he charged with folly. Genesis chapter 6. The sons of God went in under the daughters of men and bore children. He goes on, he says this, how much less in them that dwell in houses of clay, whose foundation is in the dust, which are crushed before the moth, they're destroyed from morning to even, they perish forever without any regarding it, doth not their excellency which is in them go away, they die even without wisdom. And this is all just further charging Job with his folly. Questions or comments on anything there before we close tonight? Dan. Life as, I believe is how you say it.
That revelation did not come from God. But he fabricated this with a decision to bring this vision to him to help muster this attack against Job from God.
I hesitate to say it's Satan because there's nothing to indicate that that's where it came from. And like I said, I don't see any activity of Satan involved in any of this. That said, maybe that's where it came from. But I would tend to say that he's just fabricating it to try to further his argument to prove to Job just how evil and wicked he is. You messed up. You think you're better than God. Ben?
But their spirit is the spirit of Satan in the sense that he's a human.
Right. Yeah, that's my opinion that Satan is not involved in any of this. And, but I base that like in James it says, you're drawn away of your own lusts and enticed. And Satan gets accused of a lot of things, which he doesn't care, but he gets credit, maybe I should say, for a lot of things that he has nothing to do with. And that's why I kind of hesitate to suggest that he's behind this because I just don't see any clear thing that indicates that, and I don't want to give him credit for something he didn't do. Jennifer.
I
listened
to believe that this is the spirit, and this is why. It's because he says right here, behold, he, meaning God, put no trust in his servant, and his angels he charged with folly. And it's almost as though the demon still bitter back at, he didn't even trust us. Mm-hmm.
Could be. Did somebody back Danny shake your hand? Okay. Dan?
Mm-hmm.
Well, and this may be correct, but consider this. The tongues crowd. They claim that that's the Spirit moving them when they do that. Now, I understand it could be an evil spirit. And I think that sometimes it is an evil spirit that's doing that. But sometimes it's just their own desire and imagination that's doing it too. Where neither God nor the devil has anything to do with it when speaking in tongues. So who knows? Deuteronomy 29:29. Ron. That's true. Nancy?
I kind of look at it as also,
think about this. What would be a fleshly motive on the part of these guys to attack Job? Pride or related to it?
Jealousy.
Or envy, really. Because God's jealous, so jealousy is not a sin. But envy, wanting to bring him down. And I mean, that's everything they do. That's what they're wanting to bring him down. There's no lifting them up, which is what they came for initially. They're just crushing them down more and more all the time. Anyone else before we wrap up here tonight? Did you have something? And we all can be guilty of it at times too. And it's that envy thing that, the rottenness of the bones, the Bible says. And Satan doesn't have to do anything to that. That's me. That's my flesh. That's a work of the flesh over there in Galatians chapter 5. Anything else before we close? Let's pray. Lord, help us to be kind and compassionate. Sometimes we just we go through life and we say things without really thinking. We cause hurt and added sorrow to people that are already carrying a far heavier load than we can ourselves bear. Lord, help us to be looking for opportunities to lift up others and encourage and strengthen and help them. We get nothing through this study of the book of Job. May we learn to be more compassionate to those who are struggling and suffering and slower to judge them. God, we thank you for your precious word. And again, even though this is not like the book of Revelation, there's still many things that we just don't have all the answers for. And we trust you, God, to give us the understanding that we need and help us to make the proper application in our lives. In Jesus Christ's name we pray. Amen.